Iran's leader says the current U.S. administration is no different from the previous one, since it makes the same demands over Tehran's nuclear program. The U.S. embassy in the Afghan capital has issued a fresh warning for Americans to avoid traveling to the city's airport, citing security threats. And Russia reports nearly 20,000 new daily COVID-19 cases and 799 deaths. Hello and welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us right here to Iran, where the leader of the Islamic Revolution says the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden is no different from its predecessor run by Donald Trump. Ayatollah Khamenei said the only difference between Biden and Trump is that each used a different set of words to achieve their goals over Iran's nuclear program. Trump withdrew the U.S. from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal 3 years ago and restored sanctions in order to renegotiate it for, quote, a better one. Biden has voiced willingness to rejoin the multilateral agreement. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the U.S. has the nerve to behave in a way as if it was Iran which walked away from the nuclear deal. He also blasted France, Britain, and Germany for failing to live up to their commitments under the deal. The leader said the trio's obstructionism in implementing the accord is no less than that of the U.S. Well, the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council has condemned U.S. President Joe Biden for what he called illegally threatening the Islamic Republic. In a tweet, Ali Shamkhani said Biden's emphasis on using other options with regard to Iran's nuclear program establishes Tehran's right to reciprocate. The reaction followed a meeting between Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett at the White House. During the meeting, Biden said he was putting diplomacy first on Iran's nuclear issue, but added he would be prepared to turn to other options. Biden's threat of unspecified options came after Israel's Minister of Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, accused Iran of seeking a nuclear weapon. Gantz said military action should be considered as Plan B to prevent Tehran from accessing a nuclear warhead. Iran has repeatedly dismissed such accusations, especially from Israel, that itself is in the possession of hundreds of nukes. Now to the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, which is hosting a regional summit on cooperation and partnership. A number of top regional and international officials, including the French president and Iranian foreign minister, are in attendance. The participants have pledged support for Iraq and emphasized the significance of peace and stability there. Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Khademi told the summit that Baghdad would not allow Iraq to become a base for attacking neighboring countries. Addressing the summit, the Iranian foreign minister said his country has always supported Iraq.
Iraq today plays a very significant role in all the efforts and constructive efforts because the Islamic Republic of Iran has been from the first countries in the region which admitted and declared the new Iraq and had given its support to the political institutions in this country. So the Islamic Republic of Iran has rapidly hurried to give its hand of support to their brothers in Iraq to the level of fighting terrorism and has not stopped at any sort of efforts in this regard.
Amir Abdullayan also stressed that peace is necessary for dialogue and regional security. The Iranian top diplomat expressed hope that regional countries would realize that peace will not be achieved in the absence of mutual trust. He blamed the U.S. for the chaos in the region, saying that Washington committed a crime by targeting commanders such as General Qasem Soleimani, who fought terrorists. Amir Abdullahian expressed regret over Syria's absence at the summit. He emphasized that security will be ensured through the participation of all neighboring states. The U.S. military says it has carried out a drone strike against a Daesh planner in eastern Afghanistan. The military said the strike took place in Nangarhar province and said initial indications are that the target was killed. Well, the drone strike took place early on Saturday, 2 days after a bomb attack hit the airport in Kabul. The attack was claimed by the Daesh terror group. According to U.S. media, it killed at least 180 people, including 13 U.S. service members. The attack was the deadliest for American forces in Afghanistan in over a decade. It took place as Afghans and foreign nationals were awaiting evacuation 2 weeks after the Taliban takeover of Kabul. Meanwhile, the U.S. Embassy in the Afghan capital has issued a fresh warning for Americans to avoid traveling to the city's airport, citing security threats. American citizens have also been asked to leave the surrounding areas of the airport immediately. Well, the warning came hours after the Pentagon said the evacuation process continued to face, quote, specific credible threats. Well, that followed Thursday's deadly attack outside of Kabul airport. Now, the attack hampered the evacuation process of foreign nationals and forces ahead of the August 31st deadline. However, a Western official has said the evacuation of civilians is underway at a very fast pace to meet the deadline. More than 5,000 people remain inside the airport awaiting evacuation, while some Western countries, including Spain and France, have already ended their operations. The Lebanese Prime Minister designate Najib Mikati has dismissed criticism about his country's fuel deals with Iran. During our news review program, we've discussed the matter with our guests. Let's take a look.
The Lebanese Prime Minister designate has dismissed criticisms about Beirut's fuel deals with Iran. In an interview, Najib Mikati said he opposes anything that would harm his country's interests. He called on opponents to provide help so that it won't have to resort to Iranian oil. Critics are arguing that fuel imports from Iran risk incurring more sanctions on Lebanon, currently gripped by a financial crisis. Hezbollah resistance movements says that Iran has agreed to send Lebanon a third shipment of fuel to ease the country's crippling energy shortages. Hezbollah has blamed the crisis on what it called an economic siege by the U.S. Mariam Saleh, correspondent, joins us from Beirut to give us the latest on this. And also for an analysis, we have Mohammed Obaid, who's a political analyst, joining us from Beirut. Okay, Maya, first to you. We've had some reactions there by the Lebanese Prime Minister designate regarding Iranian fuel imports to Lebanon. Tell us what sparked him to react, and then, of course, what he has said.
Well, he said these statements in an interview with a Saudi-based satellite channel, news channel, and it was very interesting that a prime minister designate who has the support of most of the Saudi-backed groups here in Lebanon to say such issues on that outlet. That was considered something by analysts as being a very significant statement for Lebanon. He said that he cannot stop the Lebanese people from acquiring their right to have fuel in light of what we see as total lack of fuel. And he called on the Arab League, he called on the Arab states to say, if you are critics of providing or importing fuel from Iran, then at least provide us with a candle. Those are some strong words from Prime Minister designate Mikati. And I think that this also coincides with the fact that he is trying to show that there is a lot of suffering in Lebanon when it comes to the fuel shortages. How people are still lining up to get their gasoline, to fill their cars with gasoline. There is no electricity. The electricity blackouts are unprecedented, and they are a huge, actually. We have no diesel for even private generators, so therefore it is a huge crisis. Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, right after these statements, basically reflected the same issue. He said that for those who are saying there are no U.S. sanctions, they're covering up for the sanctions, and they do not feel the suffering of the people. And this is what led Hezbollah to bring in and import fuel from Iran. And he stressed that the several cargoes that will be coming in will be solving issues of electricity, and especially for the lack of fuel for the hospitals and bakeries and so on, which of course have threatened Lebanon with a humanitarian crisis. He also stressed that the statements of the U.S. ambassador in Lebanon saying that Lebanon now has the right or can be allowed to import gas from Egypt through Jordan and Syria, this proves that the U.S. was the side that stood in prohibiting and stopping any sort of aid that was coming into Lebanon, or which was something that was possible 3 years ago through talks between the Lebanese and their Egyptian counterparts. So this was clear from the talk of Hezbollah Secretary General yesterday in his speech, stressing that that it is the U.S. that was holding all this assistance and this aid. And he also called on them to make exceptions. He's calling actually on those Lebanese who are trying to say that if we bring in more fuel from Iran, that therefore we will be under so-called international sanctions. And in a previous speech, Sayyid Nasrallah clarified the difference, that there are no international sanctions against Iran. It is only U.S. sanctions. And this is why we see clearly in the last few speeches how Sayyid Nasrallah is directly accusing the U.S. ambassadors in Lebanon, the U.S. embassy, the U.S. Administration of directly for enforcing sanctions on Lebanon and prohibiting any sort of assistance, whether it is through the Caesar Act that is enforced on Syria or on the issues of general sanctions against the resistance.
Well, by the way, tell us why a humanitarian situation as dire as Lebanon, in many respects, has taken a political turn and is not something that neither the U.S. or perhaps Saudi Arabia wants when it comes to fuel coming from Iran.
Well, it is clear to all the Lebanese people, although some politicians try to deny this, that these two countries we named, the United States and the Saudi Arabia, are the major ones behind the siege and the blockade and the sanctions imposed on Lebanon. And this is one way of Hezbollah doing this and having the challenge of taking the vessels from the Islamic Republic is due to this fact that these countries have gone too far as for the Lebanese needs of fuel, of medicine, of everything in life, you know, depends on diesel oil. You have the bakeries, we have no bread. In other words, hospitals are running out of diesel. That means that some patients may die. You have also the medicine. People are just having huge suffering when it comes to trying to get the medicine they need in order to survive. So the Hezbollah, the resistance movement of Lebanon, has turned this threat into an opportunity. One way or another, Hezbollah exposed and proved that it is the United States, it's Washington and Saudi Arabia and other Western countries are the ones behind all these obstacles that the Lebanese are facing. I can give you just one simple example. They always claim that the United States and some European countries claim that they want to help the Lebanese people, but they are against the political figures that are not that good. And we all admit that there is a huge level of corruption in Lebanon. But why don't these European countries and the United States, who can place any dollar that moves from one bank to another, why don't they trace back the billions of dollars that were transferred from Lebanese banks into Western countries? So this tells you about the hypocrisy of these countries when they claim that they want to help or assist Lebanon. So everything here is clear to the Lebanese people. Now, the United States, in an attempt in order to foil the Hezbollah attempt to really be the rescuer and the salvation of Lebanon through bringing in these vessels, fuel vessels, the United States have claimed that they are now agreeing to this gas line that comes from Jordan, from Egypt to Jordan and Syria. But this is against their main sanctions, the Caesar law, that are against Syria. So Hezbollah's step, to say it in a nutshell, has foiled the American conspiracies and plots, and even made the American stances in confusion and not knowing what to do in this regard.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Let me thank Mariam Saleh from Beirut, a correspondent, and Mohamed Obaid, their political analyst. With that, we come to an end for this news review.
Well, Russia has reported more COVID deaths and infections while grappling with the third wave of the outbreak. The health ministry says nearly 800 more people lost their lives in the past day, pushing the death toll to around 180,000. Russia has the highest fatalities in Europe. Nearly 20,000 new cases were also identified on Saturday. Now, this brings the country's caseload to over 6.7 million. Russia was hit by a surge in coronavirus cases that peaked in July. Authorities blamed the highly infectious Delta strand and a slow vaccination process for the spike. Only 24% of the Russian population has been fully vaccinated. Many are not willing to get the jab. Meanwhile, Iran has reported more than 600 new coronavirus deaths, pushing its total number of fatalities to nearly 106,000. Health officials also registered over 26,000 new infections over the past day. The overall caseload is standing at nearly 4.9 million. The highly contagious Delta variant is blamed for the rise in both cases and deaths. Officials have tried to accelerate mass vaccinations to curb the deadly virus. Some 18 million Iranians have received the first dose of the jab, and more than 7 million have been fully vaccinated. Well, India has reported its highest number of daily coronavirus cases in nearly 2 months, with over 46,000 new infections in 24 hours. The country also registered 509 deaths during the same period. The majority of cases were detected in the southern state of Kerala, where a big local festival was held last week. The government has urged state authorities to impose nighttime curfews amid the spike. India is the world's worst-hit country after the U.S. in terms of infections, recording more than 32.7 million cases so far. Over 437,000 Indians have also succumbed to the disease since the start of the pandemic. And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is your host Musa Al-Bahadili, and you are listening to IRIB English Radio. Today you are joining us for our program, Islamic Upbringing, wherein we discuss problems, issues, questions parents have regarding the raising of their children in an Islamic way. All of the answers given in this program are based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the household of the Prophet and, of course, the Prophet himself. Peace be upon them all. Joining us in our studio again is our dear friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic today, overall topic, is communication, which it has been for some programs now. But our more specific matter today is criticism and how it can be something negative for a child. Dear Sayyid, please elaborate.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraja. When you say to a child, you're lazy, or you're stupid, or you're dumb, or you're ignorant,
insulting.
Well, what do you expect? What are you expecting to happen as a result? If you say to him you're lazy, obviously he'll be more lazier. If you tell him he's stupid, he'll become more stupider. If you tell him he's ignorant, he becomes more ignorant. And so whatever you criticize a child with is basically going to have the same effect, because as children, well, being children, they believe what you say to them. So if you're a grown-up adult, you're the grown-up person and or the parent, and when you tell them that they are stupid, like, yeah, maybe I am really stupid.
They will take it so hard, and even in some cases carry it long into their adult lives, thinking that I am stupid.
Yeah, that's what happens, because they believe it from a young age that they're stupid and they can't do much, or they're lazy. So it becomes a habit for them. Even the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, for example, in the hadith, says, if you're not generous, one of the hadith that says, if you're not generous, act as if you're generous, and in time you will become generous.
Fake it till you make it, basically.
Yeah, fake it until you make it. That's exactly it. So with kids, it's not a matter of fake it until you make it. When you tell them they're stupid, they will actually start to believe that they are stupid. So when you want to attack a child, or when you want to throw accusation at a child, or criticize a child, and they just... they become quiet, and
they are hurt also.
Yeah,
well.
They say, obviously that's a different negative impact, that you're actually directly hurting them. So when they just stand there, just taking it inside them, I think we mentioned once, they become very aggressive themselves. They become defensive, and defensive means that they have to fight back, and it becomes into a war. And we know who's going to lose in this war. Obviously, the child is going to lose in this war, because he's just being used to so much negative criticism from the parents, and always being told that he's bad and he's this and he's that. It builds up inside them. It becomes a ticking bomb. Some kids, they react immediately to their parents' criticism.
Yes.
And they either, they say, well, if you think I'm stupid, then you're stupid. I remember one of the parents.
Classic example.
Yeah, I remember one of the parents. He was talking to his child. He wanted him. This happened in front of me. He wanted him to go back in the house, and he said to him, obviously in Arabic, he said, "Go back, may Allah curse your father." Right, and the child automatically was, I don't know, maybe that six or whatever. And the child says, "No, may Allah curse your father."
Yes.
So it became like an exact repeat of what he was trying to do.
Just for listeners, this is actually an insult in our Arabic countries.
Exactly.
Like, may Allah curse your father.
Yes, it is an insult. Mm-hmm. So the child, he doesn't understand. So sometimes they automatically respond to your criticism because they feel it's like a threat and it's an attack on them. And sometimes they keep it inside because, for example, either out of fear or either out of respect for their parents, they keep it inside. And as a child, when things bottle up inside him, obviously it would have a very devastating effect on their mental state. It becomes traumatizing as they grow older and older. So we don't want none of that to happen.
Dear Said, I must interrupt you briefly because we're going on a quick break.
I am a Muslim, Islam my deen. Allah my Lord, His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet, peace be upon him. I am a Muslim for all of time.
Dear listeners, welcome back to your program, Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss relevant issues that parents face when raising their children. We are speaking today about criticism and how horrible it can be for a child. Dear Said, please continue.
Therefore, when we try to talk to your children, we have to make sure that we don't use a very sharp, very direct criticism, because it acts as a poison in the system of the child. Either takes immediate effect or takes effect later on. So a parent has to be very careful. So when a child is trying to convey something to their parents, or they're doing something and then you're not happy with, whether you're not happy with whatever you're hearing or whatever they're doing, you really need to control your anger and not to give a quick response or judge very quickly. For example, the child shows up home and his mark in his test was very low. You know, he gets a D, he gets a C, I don't know. He gets something below the average mark. And you get angry automatically and you start to criticize the child and say, okay, you failed because you're stupid, for example. You failed because you spent all your time playing. You failed because you never this, because you never that. So you end up attacking the child directly. So when this happens, when an event happens or the child tells you something, you really need to control your emotions and your anger.
You're the grown-up in this
situation. Yeah, because you want to make sure this does not happen again. Because if you let go of your emotions or your anger, obviously this is going to keep repeating itself, because at that moment, at that point, you have just broken the child's personality. You've broken him as a person, as a human being. He's broken now.
The thing is, if I may interrupt you to say it, is most of the time the parents don't realize that they are hurting the child.
They don't, absolutely not, because I think we mentioned this many times, because the parents assume and they think that the children are their own.
Exactly.
Like their own product is mine. I can do whatever I want to do with it. It's not yours. Imagine if you had a child of a neighbor, for example, or a child of a friend or someone that you know. How would you treat them? Obviously, you're going to be nice and kind.
Nice
to them.
And more respectful.
And even when they do something stupid, you let it go. Why? Because he's someone else's child. Like, you want to be respectful. You don't want to hurt his parents. Their child is not yours. It's not your property. He's an amana, not a gift. Right? There's a big difference between an amana and a gift.
He keeps it given to you from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Ahsan, so
take
Allah,
care of it.
Allah wants you to take care of this amana. You just want you to scream at it and slap it and hit it. And
this is just at the most basic level, because you as a parent, you obviously love your children.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what happens when parents, for example, don't understand how to deal with children, and straight away they pass on judgments and they pass on criticism without, you know, having to be patient, having to understand, having to work with the child. If my child is not making it out of school, I don't know, maybe I should give him extra lessons, get him a tutor, I don't know, do something else. Using an appropriate method.
Problem solving.
Yeah.
This is just what it is.
Exactly. So use a method to get the child to, you know, increase his grades and do well at school. Just criticizing and just looking at their mistakes and just pointing fingers at them and just, I don't know, throwing all sorts of accusation, it creates a really bad child. It creates a really negative child that has just a negative look towards life. It's, you know, even when you look at terrorists, for example, if you look at the psyche of terrorists,
or criminals,
they've always been used or subjected to that kind of teaching.
Yeah, the abuser was himself abused.
Yeah.
The one racist was himself sometimes subject to racism or something else.
Exactly. So it's always, you'll find that trend happening in their life, where they were subjected to a lot of criticism, subject to a lot of orders, subject to a lot of do's and don'ts. And
it messes up their minds.
That's it. Their mind is shut down now. They just can't process anything. And then they take it out on society. So this is exactly what we will be doing. If we use that method with our children, we're creating ticking bombs in society. they will fail in society, they will fail in their marriages, they will fail with their kids as well, and it becomes, you know, it becomes a chain.
They were said, I think this is even more dangerous for Muslim parents, because we live in a society where increasingly more and more religion is separate from maybe daily life in a Western country.
Yeah.
And then these children, when they see that their parents are so strict with this Islam stuff, they do not understand that they need to pray and fast and do this and do that.
Mm.
They need an outlet of these negative emotions, and they, unfortunately, they are led astray. They go away from Islam, from religion, and from their parents as well.
Exactly. Well, this is what happens when, for example...
Sayyid, I must unfortunately interrupt you. Okay. We'll take this question. I'm sorry, your story. We'll continue it just after this quick break.
No worries. يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات Imam Ali عليه السلام said, avoid reprimanding constantly, for this act provokes the committing of sin and belittles a real reprimanding. يا مقضي الخيرات يا
Dear listeners, welcome back to your program, Islamic Upbringing. We were speaking about criticism and how negative it is, and we had to unfortunately interrupt the story of our dear friend Sayyid Al-Musawi. Sayyid, please continue your story.
So we were saying that, because you mentioned the fact that when it comes to Islamic teachings is very sensitive, is because sometimes if we criticize our children on the Islamic stuff, they will definitely leave it, or at least they will do it one day and not do it other.
You've seen it all.
Yeah. So I was speaking to this little girl. She was 13, and she was talking to me about hijab, and she's like, you know, I asked my parents, like, I don't want to wear the hijab, and they just told me off. Right, so they's like, how dare you? You're a Muslim woman. Do you this?
They feel insulted.
That? Yeah, she got insulted, and now she's more encouraged to take her off. She's like, yes, you know what? At least I want to try without it, see what happens. And so I couldn't tell that the approach that the parent took was absolutely wrong.
It was a horrible movie.
Yeah, and then I started talking to her. I was like, you know what? Forget about the hijab. We'll get to that later. Let's talk about something else, for example. Let's talk about, I don't know, like, what do you know about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala?
Start with that, because
exactly.
There's been a miscommunication about this.
Exactly. So I said, you know, tell me about something that you do, that you, you know, Allah asked you to do and you do it. And he's like, oh, this is something I do always. I'm like, why do you do it? And then, you know, I took her on a journey that's completely irrelevant to hijab. And I think within I don't know, then an hour or so, and then second day, she's like, you know what? Now I understand why I'm wearing a hijab. I know why it
now
needs to be done.
Exactly.
Right? So, but with parents, because we get threatened ourselves. I don't know, maybe it's like, oh, my child's going to go the wrong way. Therefore, like, I have to be very harsh with them. Actually, that's how you lose them. If my child comes to me and tells me, well, you know what, for example, I have porn addiction, I could slap him and I could lock him in a room and take all his devices.
Yes.
Or I could say, you know what, I have a problem I need to solve, which seems to be a very huge problem. If my child listens to music, for example, if my child is not praying, if my child is not fasting,
right.
I can tell them off, obviously, and I can beat them up.
But you shouldn't, because they came to you in this very vulnerable stage in their life, and they were frank with you. You say, I have this problem.
Exactly. So, like I said before, you have to be very calm, very collected, no anger issues, no passing judgments very quickly. And without criticizing at all, because if you do so, if the child comes to you and you act as if you're surprised and you're angry, and be sure that he will not come to you next time. Sometimes we could give them excuses, right? If he's not doing something, like, look, I understand you're not doing it because, for example, I say this to my daughter, she's only 13, 14. Like, you know what? I know you're not helping your mom because I know you have to go to school and you're tired and everything else. So I give you, I give an excuse. Herself's like, you know what? My father's been very understanding.
He's understanding.
You know, maybe I could actually, I can do a bit of work.
I can also be understanding.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know,
it's
what?
A give and take.
Exactly. So, you know what? Maybe I can do a bit of help with my in the house, help my mom out. Or I could say to her, what kind of a lazy child you are, you know, this and that. And she will say, you know what? she'll just lock herself in the room. She's like, I don't want to talk to you. So the approach makes a huge difference, especially when it comes to criticizing as parents, is always not the best method. It's always not the best way.
Dear Said, our time for today's program is unfortunately up. This has been a very, very beneficial discussion we've had today, so thank you for your time, dear Said. I hope our listeners also reap the benefits from this discussion. Yet again, this has been your host, Musa Al-Bahadili, coming to you from your program, Islamic Upbringing. Thank you for joining us, as usual. If you have any questions, comments, feedback, or something of that matter, you can, of course, contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. You can also just visit us at our website, parstoday.com. As always, thank you for joining us, and fi amanillah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz. Every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Four Saudis who participated in the 2018 killing of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi received paramilitary training in the United States the previous year under a contract approved by the U.S. State Department, according to documents and people familiar with the arrangement. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Mark Mazzetti, Julian Barnes, and Michael LaForgia. The piece is titled, Saudi Operatives Who Killed Khashoggi Received Paramilitary Training in United States. We'll be right back. for Saudi nationals who participated in the 2018 killing of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi received paramilitary training in the United States the previous year under a contract approved by the U.S. State Department, according to documents and people familiar with the arrangement. The instruction occurred as the secret unit responsible for Mr. Khashoggi's killing was beginning an extensive campaign of kidnapping, detention and torture of Saudi citizens, ordered by Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler, to crush dissent inside the kingdom. The training was provided by the Arkansas-based security company Tier 1 Group, which is owned by the private equity firm Cerberus Capital Management. The company says the training, including safe marksmanship and countering an attack, was defensive in nature and devised to better protect Saudi leaders. One person familiar with the training said it also included work in surveillance and close quarters battle. There is no evidence that the American officials who provided the training or Tier 1 group executives knew that the Saudis were involved in the crackdown inside Saudi Arabia. But the fact that the government approved high-level military training for operatives who went to carry out the grisly killing of a journalist shows how intensely intertwined the United States has become with an autocratic nation, even as its agents committed horrific human rights abuses. It also underscores the perils of military partnerships with repressive governments and demonstrates how little oversight exists for those forces after they return home. Such issues are likely to continue as American private military contractors increasingly look to foreign clients to shore up their business as the United States scales back overseas deployments after two decades of war. The U.S. State Department initially granted a license for the paramilitary training of the Saudi Royal Guard to Tier 1 Group, starting in 2014, during the Obama administration. The training continued during at least the first year of former President Donald J. Trump's term in office. Louis Bremer, a senior executive of Cerberus Capital Management, Tier 1 Group's parent company, confirmed his company's role in the training last year in written answers to questions from lawmakers as part of his nomination for a top Pentagon job during the Donald Trump administration. The administration does not appear to have sent the document to Congress before withdrawing Mr. Bremer's nomination. Lawmakers never received answers to their questions. In the document, which Louis Bremer provided to the New York Times, he said that four members of the Khashoggi kill team had received Tier 1 group training in 2017, and two of them had participated in a previous iteration of the training, which went from October of 2014 until January of 2015. The training provided was unrelated to their subsequent heinous acts, Louis Bremer said in his responses. He said that a March 2019 review by Tier 1 Group uncovered no wrongdoing by the company and confirmed that the established curriculum training was unrelated to the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Mr. Louis Bremer said that the State Department, in collaboration with other U.S. departments and agencies, is responsible for vetting the foreign forces trained on U.S. soil. All foreign personnel trained by the Tier 1 group are cleared by the U.S. government for entry into the United States before commencement of their training. In a statement, Louis Bremer said that the training was protective in nature and that the company conducted no further training of Saudis after December of 2017. The Tier 1 group management, the board, and I stand firmly with the US government, the American people, and the international community in condemning the horrific murder of Jamal Khashoggi, he said. A 2019 column by David Ignatius of Washington Post first reported that members of the Khashoggi kill team had received training in the United States. David Ignatius wrote that the CIA had cautioned other government agencies that some special operations training may have been conducted by Tier 1 group under a U.S. State Department license. The issue was central to Mr. Luis Bremer's contentious confirmation hearing and the written questions from senators asking him what role, if any, Tier 1 group had in training Saudi nationals who had participated in the Jamal Khashoggi operation. A State Department spokesman declined to confirm whether it awarded licenses to Tier 1 group for the Saudi training. This administration insists on responsible use of U.S. origin defense equipment and training by our allies and partners, and considers appropriate responses if violations occur, said the spokesman Ned Price. Saudi Arabia faces significant threats to its territory, and we are committed to working together to help Riyadh strengthen its defenses. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the Saudi embassy in Washington did not comment. Former President Donald Trump weighed installing the head of Cerberus Capital Management, Steven Feinberg, in a top intelligence post last year, but the appointment was never made. While the Trump administration had appointed Mr. Feinberg to lead the president's intelligence advisory board in 2018, questions emerged about potential conflicts of interest. Cerberus Capital Management formerly owned the military contractor DynCorp, which among other things provides intelligence advice to the United States and other clients. It is unclear which members of the Khashoggi kill team participated in the Tier 1 group training. Seven members of the team belong to an elite unit charged with protecting the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, according to an American intelligence report about the assassination declassified in February. The role of operatives from the so-called Rapid Intervention Force in the Khashoggi killing helped bolster the American intelligence case that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the operation. Members of the Rapid Intervention Force would not have participated in the killing without his consent, according to the report. The group exists to defend the Saudi Crown Prince and answers only to him, the document said. Members of the team that killed Jamal Khashoggi were involved in at least a dozen operations starting in 2017, according to officials who have read declassified intelligence reports about the campaign. Mr. Khashoggi, a columnist for the Washington Post, was killed inside the Saudi consulate building in Istanbul in October of 2018. His body was dismembered using a bone saw. The assassination brought widespread condemnation of the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who tried to deny any knowledge of the operation. Eight defendants were sentenced to up to 2 decades in prison last year, but human rights advocates criticized the punishments as aimed at lower-level agents while sparing their leaders. The CIA concluded that the Saudi Crown Prince directed the operation, but Donald Trump said the evidence was inconclusive and that America's diplomatic and economic relationship with Saudi Arabia took priority. After President Joe Biden took office and debated the issue with his advisors before the release of the declassified intelligence report, his administration announced sanctions on Saudi citizens involved in the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, including members of the elite unit who protect the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. but President Joe Biden chose not to directly punish the Saudi crown prince. The earlier iteration of the training, which took place during the Obama administration, occurred before Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman consolidated his power in the kingdom. His predecessor as Crown Prince Mohammed bin Nayef was a close ally of the United States and in particular of John O. Brennan, who served as CIA Director General under President Barack Obama. Prince Mohammed bin Nayef was the Saudi counterterrorism chief and collaborated closely with the Obama administration officials. In 2017, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman pushed Prince Mohammed bin Nayef from power and executed a broader campaign to wrest power from his rivals, including a notorious episode of imprisoning Saudi royals and businessmen at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh. The Trump administration considered him a valuable partner in the Middle East, and Prince Mohammed bin Salman developed a close relationship with Jared Kushner. The former president's son-in-law, who served as a senior advisor to Donald Trump. Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the son of King Salman, is the next in line to the Saudi throne. Prince Mohammed bin Nayef remains under house arrest in Saudi Arabia. The Tier 1 group website lists numerous American special operations and intelligence units as clients, along with specialty units that do not require recognition. It said it also trains OGA special operator teams, one pseudonym for CIA paramilitary units, as well as international allied forces. Under federal rules that restrict foreign sales of American arms and military expertise, Tier 1 group was required to apply for licenses to train the foreign operatives. Those license applications were examined by State Department officials who were processing tens of thousands of licenses per year, and they were approved. The approval would have allowed members of the Saudi Royal Guard to enter the United States on visas processed by the American Embassy in Riyadh. The path is similar to the one followed by Second Lieutenant Mohammad al-Shamrani, a Royal Saudi Air Force officer who opened fire in 2019 at a naval air station in Pensacola, Florida, where he was receiving military flight training. That attack killed at least 3 people and wounded 8 others.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.